Francisco versus Gonzalez. Justice Frydenberg has joined the court. This is Mr. Chipman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman. I represent the appellant Eulalia Miguel Francisco. This is a case where a complaint was filed in Douglas County District Court for paternity, but for also for custody, and then there was a request for a special immigrant and juvenile status findings. The defendant in this matter is Sergio De Leon, was served by publication. There was an affidavit for publication filed with the court where the plaintiff, my client, alleged that she had no means of contacting De Leon. She contacted friends and family, they didn't know where his whereabouts, and she, in essence, had no way of serving him personally or otherwise, no other opportunity for other constructive service. The court approved.
Was there some idea that he was in Nebraska or in the United States, or was he in Central America?
So in her testimony, she's in the actual hearing itself, she testifies that she didn't know if he was in Guatemala or she didn't know where he was. It's been 2 years since she had last seen him. She fled Guatemala because he was threatening to kill her because she was pregnant with his child. He didn't want another mouth to feed. So at least her testimony at trial, along with the Exhibit 2, which is offered at trial, states that, you know, basically his last known whereabouts were in Guatemala, as well as the affidavit for publication. You know, the affidavit in support of the motion for publication states that she doesn't know where he's at, she doesn't know, you know, contact his friends and family, and has no other means of serving him. And of course, the court approved that and approved publication to be done in Douglas County and in a local newspaper, which was done. And so we have the hearing. The judge fails to make the findings that it's in the best interest of Christopher. Christopher is the oldest child at this point in time. Christopher's 7. I think he was 6 at the time of the hearing. And he was born in Guatemala. His younger sister was born in the United States, Yemleth. And so we're asking for SIJ findings. And part of that is to find that it's the best interest of Christopher for him to remain in the United States. The judge says he doesn't have that authority, but he grants custody to the mother, and then a motion to alter amend is filed, and then the trial judge at that point in time says, I've reviewed this, I'm not gonna make any SIJ findings, I'm gonna remove any findings regarding Christopher, including the fact that he's been abandoned, neglected, and abused by his father, and instead I'm gonna find that this court doesn't have jurisdiction under the paternity statute, and so then that is another motion to alter or amend is filed, and at that point in time the trial judge appears to concede that it's not a jurisdictional issue under the paternity statute, but instead is a statute of limitations defense, which he then seems to withdraw or says is immaterial in that last order in March of 2018, and instead says this is a procedural due process issue. And the defendant in this matter has not received reasonable notice, and so I'm going to deny the motion to alter amend, which left the order then with, you know, which is basically the second order, which means that Yamleth, there's a finding that with Yamleth that he is the father, and the mother was granted custody of the 1-year-old at the time, now she's 2, I believe, but it leaves Christopher, the now 7-year-old, now he's actually 8 now, but without any custody order whatsoever, and so the court's, you know, procedural process issue. I think that there's a 1950 case, and actually I know there's a 1950 case in the for the U.S. Supreme Court, which talks about service by publication. It's Mullane versus Central Hanover Bank and Trust, and it's 339 U.S. 306. And according to the law review articles that I read, it is the quintessential or the standard bearer for basic minimum due process for service by publication in a local newspaper. And
what are the legal errors that you believe now that the trial judge made?
Well, I believe that the legal error is at the end of the day, his final determination was that there was not procedural due process. And
I agree that he refers to procedural due process, but earlier in that same order, he says, he concludes that the court did not determine that it did not have jurisdiction because of service, and says the plaintiff did not comply with the provisions of Nebraska Revised Statute 25-512.01 by mailing a copy of the published notice to the defendant's last known place of residence or filing an affidavit required by that statute. Now, I think that is an incorrect statutory reference. I think the district court intended to refer to 25-520.01 that refers to requirements of mailing a copy to the defendant's last known place of residence or filing an affidavit required by that statute. I didn't see any argument in your brief addressing the applicability of 25-520.01 or if you complied with it. So could you help me out with that now?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. The judge meant to say 520.01. Instead, he cites the wrong. He cites basically the corporate statute for service, constructive service. 520.01, you know, as you know, states that you have to mail it to the last known address. Or if you can't, if you don't know the last known address, then you have to, you know, basically state that you are due diligence. You can't find the person. You can't look at this person. So I believe that that's done by the affidavit for the affidavit in support of the public approval of publication or the affidavit of the motion for service by publication, because it says in there that there's, you know, through due diligence that they cannot locate this person. They have no idea where he's located. You know, I mean, you know, it's constructive service. And so there is, you know, no means really of finding or locating this person at this time. And this is basically the best that the client and the attorney can do is by constructive service, by putting it in the local newspaper. So I think it's, you know, if you say that she had a mail to the last known address, there is no means of contacting him. She doesn't know where he is. She has no idea where he was. You know, he's maybe in Guatemala, maybe he was in Guatemala. She has no idea of finding him, of contacting him, of sending anything into where he may be.
So you feel the affidavit satisfied the statute, the proper statute, the 520.01?
Correct. I believe that, in essence, that it does satisfy it because it does the same thing. I mean, in the sense that...
It mirrors the statute.
It mirrors the statute, okay. Yes, Your Honor.
The affidavit you're referring to was filed before...
Yes, Your Honor. So
the publication was made, correct?
That's correct.
And so does the statute speak in terms of timing as to when the affidavit required by 25-520.01 needs to be filed with the court?
There's basically, it needs to be filed roughly like 5 days after the first date of publication. And then that affidavit needs to be filed within 10 days. But I take that to mean that if you're going to serve it by, you know, by first class mail or by mail, you know, it takes about 80, 90 bucks to send it down to Guatemala. But the thing is that I take that to mean that you're actually going to try to provide constructive service also through mailing to the last known address. And in this case, is she has no idea where he is, where, you know, it's just not going to work in Guatemala for her to try to provide him some kind of, you know, mailing.
Counsel, the case that you were talking about when one of us asked you a question, I think was the very case that prompted the statute that we're talking about. And the whole notion behind that were that the default judgments were being entered all the time against people who not only could be found, but they just weren't being found. What was in this affidavit that you filed seeking publication that spoke to the statutory requirement in the statute we're now talking about diligent investigation and inquiry? In other words, what did that affidavit say that the plaintiff did in this case to diligently investigate and inquire and find the best address they could for the defendant, if anything at all?
So what the affidavit says is that basically that she's contacted friends and family in Guatemala. They don't know where he is. And so, again, it's a different game of in Guatemala. It perhaps could have been fleshed out better, Your Honor.
If I look it up, what's it going to say exactly? I don't want the editorial comment.
No, it's going to say that she It's here, it's transcript, page 55, says, see, actually, I'm wrong with that.
That's all right.
It's here.
I can look it up later.
No, it's, I had it here. Anyway, what she says is, I can't, you know, I don't, you know, she doesn't know where he's at, she has no means of finding him, and she didn't. So she contacted friends and family in Guatemala. He's not around. She has not seen him since 2015, when she was 7 months pregnant. She knows there's no other way to locate the defendant, so that's a key. I have no way of locating him, you know, but I wish to proceed on my complaint for paternity and custody. And so, even if she would have filed this affidavit, you know, subsequently, the same affidavit, I think it still would have served the purpose of saying, I have no means of contacting him, no means of mailing anything to him. I don't know where he's at, I don't know where he's been. And so I think it satisfies, you know.
Does it say she doesn't know what his last known address was?
It does not. It does not actually specifically say that.
And she knows where she lived with him.
She does know where she lived with him, but I think also that it's, you know, implied with her at least that the mailing system is very different. You know, you just basically mail it to a village in Guatemala, maybe it may not get there. And so she potentially could have done that, but
But that's not in the affidavit either.
That's not in the affidavit, but again, I mean, what she's saying is, I mean, she's not going to be able to mail this thing anyway to this guy. And so, and the judge doesn't seem to, I guess the judge was a little bit concerned by this, but at the end of the day, there's never any discussion on the record. It's subsequent, you know, to a second, or actually it was a second motion to alter or amend, where he just kind of pulls this out of his hat and says, he didn't follow the statute. Again, it makes no sense that due process was good for the youngest child, but there's no due process for Christopher.
So if we agree with the district court on this service issue, what's that? What impact does that have on the youngest child?
If you agree with the youngest, if you agree, then it has to be for both. It makes no sense.
So
I think Judge
Funk
was
asking.
Yeah,
no, that's not what. But
Judge Funk was asking.
Yeah.
Doesn't that mean you lose on both children?
But it. It could mean that, but it also could mean that at the end of the day, that the judge found it satisfactory, you know, for the youngest child, which, if it's good enough for the, you know, the 1-year-old, it should be good enough for the 6 or 7 or 8-year-old in this case. And, you know, it seemed to me, I think it's pretty apparent that the judge's true motive in this case really isn't the due process of the defendant, De Leon. It really is that he doesn't want to make SIJ findings, because that's, we're slowly cutting that away, you know. We're finding many other reasons not to give Christopher the SIJ findings. And so, you know, that I mean, I think it's in many ways form without substance. Form without substance.
If you lose on the service issue, can you start all over again?
If we lose on the service issue, then I would say potentially yes. I mean, that we would basically, there would be a failure of service, so under 25217, you'd probably have to say that service was never perfected, so it was dismissed, and then we would have another bite at the apple. However, or you could say that, you know, she should have brought the action and joined both children, right? Because it's the same common factor. I mean, both kids have the same dad. You have a common, you know, action, and so there could be an argument that she's precluded from bringing that paternity action, and she has no remedy because they found paternity. You know, this is a paternity case. She should have brought all of her actions at one time, and for some reason failed to properly serve the dad on the older kid, but did it perfectly for the younger child. So, with that, I would ask that.
But a failure of service would preclude that wouldn't have collateral estoppel or claim preclusion effect, would it?
What I'm saying though is, like, you know, can you piecemeal? I mean, maybe you can piecemeal your paternity actions against the same person, in the sense of, you know, it probably wouldn't have collateral stop. You're probably right. So she probably would be able to bring it again, or at least attempt to bring it again, as to Christopher. But it, you know, again, it doesn't make sense that it's good enough. You know, the judge knew that, like, this guy couldn't be found. You can't mail it to this guy. I mean, it seemed clear, you know, through the transcript that this guy can't be located. Nobody knows where this guy is. He may be in Guatemala, maybe not. And again, I think that case, the Mullane case, which, you know, Justice Castle refers to, it talks about it. Constructive service, public proof of service by publication is good enough You know, if it can be shown that it's going to fail like anything else. And that's what actually it says that in the case, in the language of the case, that so basic proof of publication is going to fail like everything else, that's good enough. And here she did it. She followed the statute. She followed, you know, 519. And at the end of the day, it would not have been fruitful for her to...
I'm curious as to the comment that you feel that the SIJ finding was on the horizon, but that would only be relevant as to Christopher, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the little girl's born in the United States, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Christopher is the only one that would pertain to SIJ findings, so SIJ findings would allow him to apply then to USCIS to then gain status, potentially.
Opportunity
would not guarantee by any means.
Opportunity
to apply. And so I think that case is already, this court already decided in Henry Carlos D that, you know, you have to, that 43-1238 subsection B.
Well, I'm kind of searching for the inconsistency on which you're dwelling with respect to the previous finding on publication.
Right.
That somehow was good for one child but not good for the other. But as to the first child, there's really no SIJ sequelae.
Right. Exactly, that's right, and that's exactly it. So there's no other explanation for why he allows Yamleth to, you know, for Eulalia to have custody of Yamleth, but not to have custody of Christopher, other than it's an SIJ issue. I mean, even after he argues that there's no jurisdiction, and we point out that it's a statute of limitations issue under the paternity statute, then he says, well, that's immaterial. There's a procedural due process issue, citing the wrong statute, but then saying, you know, without specifically saying that, you know, we failed to file 520.01, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's form without substance, because this guy, there's nowhere to mail it to this guy, and at the end of the day, you know, it's just, what we've done is as good as it's ever going to get. You know, this is constructive service, and I think it follows the 14th Amendment due process, which the mundane case says, which Judge Castle says that 520.01 is actually modeled after. So I've gone way over my time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chipman. Is there anybody here on behalf of the appellee? Does not appear to be so. So we will go to the next case of the